back. It's a crime. It's a crime.
Here come the drums.
C-R-I-M-E-W-A-V. You're rolling with the Crime Wave, the internet's first and only podcast devoted to the crime short story. I'm Seth Harwood, your host, the first name in crime podcast fiction, and I'm ready to bring you this week's story. I'm excited to bring you Adrenaline this week, a story by Dave Zeltzerman. Dave is a Boston area crime writer. He's got like a Man Just Out of Prison noir series, and the first book, Small Crimes, will be available in the U.S. this October. The second book, Pariah, is due out in the U.K. next January. You can learn more about Dave at his site, DaveZeltzerman.com. Little bit of a warning this week. There's a little bit of harsh violence, a little bit of torture. So if you didn't like torture in Jack Palms 3, you might want to ease out on this one, or you might not be up your alley. I'm just letting you know, there's a little bit of torture in here and some harsh violence.
Adrenaline by Dave Zeltzman. The elderly couple who owned the house lay dead upstairs in their bedroom. At least I was assuming they were dead. I heard them crying out earlier, then silence. Victor made an offhand comment to Al about how he held them down while Benny cut their throats. Maybe he was lying. Maybe Benny screwed up and they were still alive, but if they were, they weren't making any noise. We were all now in the basement. The whole gang. Me, Benny, Victor, Tony, and Al. They had me tied to a wooden chair, my ankles secured tightly with razor wire to the chair legs, my wrists tied with rope to the chair arms. Benny had already used pliers to pull three of my fingernails off. He'd spent the last 2 hours sticking pins into the exposed flesh. Now he was lighting matches and burning the tips of my fingers. He was trying to make me tell them where I had hidden the $800,000. I guess he was doing what he thought he had to, but it looked to me like he was enjoying it too much. The last time I passed out, I caught glimpses of the rest of them when I came to. Victor's face, a blank slate, he couldn't care less what was happening to me, just like he didn't give a shit what happened to the old folks upstairs. Tony smirking, maybe looking a little queasy, and Al staring at me with big, soulful eyes as if what was happening to me pained him greatly. As far as I was concerned, not a peep. Let them do whatever the fuck they wanted. They weren't going to get word one out of me. 15 years ago, when I was a member of the U.S. Army's Special Forces, I spent a year and a half in Iraq, and I'd find myself wondering then if I'd be able to stand up to torture if I was ever caught. Now I knew. They could have done anything to me, and they wouldn't have cracked me. The pain might have brought tears to my eyes, and at times made me pass out, but I wasn't talking. After I left the Army, I bounced around a lot and worked everything from construction to private security to fishermen. It was hard staying in one job for too long. I had done too much killing and too many missions and missed the adrenaline rushes from my time in Special Forces. It got to the point where I was antsy all the time. I couldn't sleep or do much of anything. 5 years ago, I started putting my training to use, doing a string of bank jobs up and down the East Coast. I didn't kill anyone. I don't think I even hurt anyone badly. I also didn't make nearly as much money as I'd expected, but it gave me what I needed, especially the rush. At least then I started sleeping better. 16 months ago, I'd met up with Al. He was putting together a gang to knock over high-stakes poker games, and they needed someone like me. Someone who could plan out the operations and was as fearless as the rest of them, maybe even more so. They had enough muscle already with Victor and Tony, and plenty of psycho with Benny. And while Al was a smart guy, he didn't have the operational skills that I had. Without someone like me, every job would end up a massacre. We pulled 5 jobs without incident, at least nothing more serious than Benny slashing people's faces with the barrel of his 9mm. The 6th job, all hell broke loose. It was bad news from the start. First, Al's info was all wrong. Instead of it being a group of medical professionals, it was mafia. High-end guys, big shots. Then Victor wasn't watching carefully enough and let one of them pull out a gun, and before you knew it, bullets were flying everywhere. While everyone was being shot up, I grabbed the money and ran. It was a lot more money than we were expecting. At least 10 times as much. Maybe Al didn't screw up with his info. Maybe he just didn't want to tell us who we were really hitting. Either way, it didn't matter to me. I kept running all the way to Los Angeles. Earlier today, a car pulled up to me on the street for directions. The window rolled down, and when I leaned over to help, there was Benny in the driver's seat leering at me. Before I could react, I was jolted from behind with a stun gun. Christ, I thought they were all dead, but it was still damn careless of me. Right before I dropped to the pavement in convulsions, I couldn't help wondering how many of them survived. Turned out they all did. They might each have taken some bullets, but they were all still living and breathing. I didn't bother wondering about how they'd found me. It wasn't as if I was being all that careful the last 4 months. It made me think that maybe there was a reason for that. That maybe I'd gotten bored and was still looking for a big-time adrenaline rush. That I was hoping one or more of them had survived and would find me and put me in this situation. Or maybe I was just overanalyzing the situation, trying to do anything to keep my mind off of what was happening to me. Fuck if I knew. Except, I had to keep my mind spinning on other thoughts than what was being done to my fingers. How long ago did they snatch me? 10 hours ago? More? Less? I don't know. I was losing track of time. More matches were lit. Benny showed a hard grin as he pressed the burnt ends against the exposed flesh where my fingernails had been, his expression turning somewhat demented, partly from the way his face had caved in when one of the mafiosa's bullets took out a chunk of his cheekbone, and partly from how bright his eyes had become. Yeah, he was enjoying this way too much. I decided then I was going to see him dead. No matter what was in store for me, he was going to die first. Spiteful son of a bitch, ain't I? At least it gave me something to focus my mind on. Benny tried to give me a sympathetic smile, but the craziness shining in his eyes made it a joke. Joe, why the fuck don't you just talk? He said. I think it's because he's enjoying it, Victor offered from somewhere behind him. Benny took hold of my jaw, his fingers digging hard into the bone. He forced my head upward so our eyes would meet, but I kept my focus somewhere around the middle of his skull as if I was staring straight into his brain. Is that it? Benny asked. You one of them sick masochistic fucks who get off on what I'm doing to you? He increased the pressure with his fingers, squeezing harder into my jawbone. He studied me like that for a good 30 seconds, then to Victor. I don't think that's it. I think he's just a stubborn fuck. You ask me, he's getting off on it, Victor said, half-teasing. Nah, I don't think so. He's just too fucking stubborn for his own good. Benny shook his head sadly. Then he turned sideways and asked, What do you think, big guy? Al, disgusted, said, Just get on with it, okay? Benny focused his attention back to me. You gonna make me hurt you real bad first? Is that it? I kept staring through him, refusing to say a word. He made a tsk-tsk noise. Joe, so far I've just been fooling around. You really gonna make me get serious? Shit. I hate having to do this to you. Before you fucked us on that last job, I liked you. Thought you were a good guy. Sure, I could tell he hated every second of what he was doing. Son of a bitch. I ignored it when he picked up a nutcracker. Fuck if he was gonna see fear or anything else in my eyes. Victor helped him pull my fingers apart, and then my middle finger was clasped between two metal bars. Benny twisted the nutcracker until the bone in my finger cracked like a dry stick. A satisfied smirk showing, he kept twisting. You're crying, Joe, he said, his voice more of a grunt from his exertion. Fuck, just like a little girl. Why don't you just tell us where our money is so we can get this over with? He kept twisting. Out of the corner of my eye, I could see the skin separating on my finger. I could see the broken bone sticking out of the gaping wound. Damn, it hurt like a mother. I'd been concentrating like hell to welcome the pain and become one with it. And for the most part before it had worked. This time, though, fuck. One more hard twist and the world ebbed violently in and out like a wave crashing over me. Then everything just disappeared. I don't know how long I was out. I passed out a few times before this, but those times it seemed like I was only gone for a few seconds. This time I knew it had been much longer, maybe as long as a half hour. Gradually I became aware of a tapping noise. My eyes were being forced open, and as I focused, The grayish blur in front of me transformed to Al's round, sorrowful face. He was slapping me lightly, trying to bring me to consciousness. Once he realized he had succeeded, he stopped his slapping. As he stared at me, his eyes were as sad and soulful as ever, and he even let them turn a bit moist. "Fuck, Joe. It doesn't have to be this way," he said. "If you do the right thing, we can all walk out of here happy." The two of us were alone. I guess the plan was to play good cop, bad cop, or good torturer, bad torturer. My finger was throbbing as if it were being pulled apart in a vice. I didn't let on, though. A quick sideways glance of it showed that they had wrapped a bandage around it, probably hoping I'd forget that the bone was popping out of the skin. Al's thick eyes lowered a bit as he tried smiling at me. He was maybe 50 and had a heavily lined face and dark curly brown hair. A big man, bigger than the rest of us, but also softer than any of the others. Kind of a teddy bear type. At 260, he probably outweighed Benny by 100 pounds. But then again, Benny was as hard as a blade of steel. "You'll still get some money out of this, Joe," he said. "Not a full share, not after what you put us through, but something. I'll try to get them to agree to 50 grand. How does that sound?" I let that sit between us for a while, his sad, soulful eyes ever hopeful. Then I asked him if he thought I was a fucking idiot. It was the first words I'd spoken since they'd snatched me. He seemed surprised I'd bothered to respond to him. Then he manufactured some hurt in those soulful eyes of his over the fact that I didn't believe him. "I don't think that at all, Joe. If you can just trust me, you can walk out of here alive and with some money in your pocket. By the end of the day, we can all be happy. Now what would be wrong with that?" "One more time," I said. "I'm not an idiot. I know I'm a dead man. So quit the fucking act." Al was frowning, his large brow heavily creased. "I don't know why you're saying this. There's no percentage in us killing you. If we leave your body here, you'll connect us to the couple upstairs. If we take your body with us, then we'll have to worry about how to dispose of it. It's just so much easier for everyone if you walk away on your own." "Shut the fuck up." I waited until he closed his mouth. Then I went on, "Here's the deal, and I'm only offering it once. I accept the fact I'm a dead man, and to be honest about it, I don't give a shit. You can have Benny fucking cut me open and pull my intestines out inch by inch, and I'm not talking. I've nothing against you, Al, and not much against Victor and Tony, but I'm not too happy with Benny right now. If you want to know where I hid the 800 grand, you have to kill that psycho bastard in front of me. I have to see him die. You do that, and I'll tell you where the money is. I know I'm going to die today, but I want to see that cocksucker go first. One more thing. I lose any part of me, a finger, a tooth, anything, and the deal's off. The money will disappear with me." When I was mentioning the part about Benny cutting me open and pulling my intestines out inch by inch, I could see the idea of that flash in Al's eyes, but he quickly dismissed it, realizing it wouldn't do the trick. It wouldn't get me to talk. Once he dismissed it, his eyes went back to being soulful and hurt. What a bunch of fucking hogwash he tried selling me about the difficulty in getting rid of me. Benny would have no trouble cutting me into pieces. Put those pieces in some garbage bags, and it would be no problem leaving them scattered along the highway. Or use a few gallons of sulfuric acid to melt off my face and fingerprints. Getting rid of my body would be easy, and I was sure Benny had already thought up a dozen ways to do it. Jesus, it was one thing to torture me, another to insult my intelligence. Al's face darkened as he thought over my proposal. Finally, he shook his head. "I can't do that, Joe. For Christ's sakes, let's be reasonable." I'd already tuned him out. When they snatched me, they had emptied my pockets. I knew they had searched the motel room I'd been staying in. There were no other clues where the money might be. I knew as well as they did that without me talking, they were never going to have any idea where the money was. I couldn't help smiling at the thought of that. Al took hold of my face and moved it so we were again looking at each other. He could see the reason behind my smile. He let go of me and tugged absently at his lip as he regarded me. "Joe," he started, his voice weak, awkward, "if you don't start cooperating with us, it's going to get ugly. You know that, don't you?" I didn't bother answering him. I didn't have to. We sat together for a few minutes with Al wringing his hands and trying to think of something to say to me. Then he got up and left. When he came back, it was with the rest of them. Benny stormed to the front and hit me hard in the ear, knocking me to the floor. I could feel a trickle of blood leak from my ear. Victor and him righted my chair, then Benny got in my face. "You stubborn fuck," Benny said, his breath sour and smelling like cat food. "We would have given you some money and let you walk out of here mostly in one piece, but fuck you. You had your chance. When I'm done with you, what's left of you anyways, it's going to be begging to tell me where the money is." He slid a switchblade from his pocket and opened it, making sure I'd get a good long look at the 6-inch blade. "You're going to start losing slices, Joe, and whatever I cut off, you're eating. Even if I have to shove it down your throat. So what you in the mood for? A nose or ear?" I just stared through him. If he was expecting fear or anything else, fuck him. Let him will away at me all he wanted. This was the ultimate test, and I knew I was up to the challenge. The adrenaline now was pushing through me, making me dizzy. And as far as Al went, let it eat away at him for the rest of his miserable life that he might have found out about the money. "No preference, huh?" Benny was saying, his breath now smelling more like a toilet than anything else. "You want to make it look like you ain't fucking listening to me? Is that it? Fuck you, then. You want to act like a deaf man? Might as well make it your ear." I didn't move. I sat as still as stone. Benny, furious, his face crimson, moved quickly and grabbed my ear, bringing the edge of the blade against it. Before the blade could be pushed upwards, there was a blur of motion, then Benny being pulled away from me. Tony had him in a bear hug. Benny looked startled as all hell as he looked at Al, moving towards him, holding out a piece of the same type of razor wire that was biting into my ankles. Victor looked confused also. "What the fuck?" Benny started. Before he could get another word out, Al was on him, wrapping the razor wire around his neck and pulling it tight. He had prepared for this, both ends of the razor wire attached to makeshift wooden handles so he could pull tightly without cutting his own hands. The shock in Benny's eyes was really something to see, but he wasn't going down gently, his legs kicking spastically like they had a life of their own. Not that it was doing him much good. "What the fuck are you doing?" Victor sputtered out. He tried to pull Al away. Al turned and barked at him to step back, his eyes dead, black holes, any soulfulness from them long since gone. "If I don't do this, Joe doesn't tell us where the money is. Now back the fuck away." Victor hesitated for a moment, but took a step back and watched Al's round face purpling from his efforts as he pulled the wire tight and just about decapitated Benny. Benny's legs were still kicking, though, making me think of a chicken with its head cut off. The stench of his bowels emptying filled the room. "He'll tell us. We just need to keep working on him," Victor argued, his eyes jumping from Al to Benny's head that was now nearly sliced off. His feet had stopped kicking. Another few pulls on the razor wire, and his head would be completely separated from his body. Al realized that and let go of the wire. Benny's lifeless body slumped to the floor. He wasn't going to tell us shit, not with the military training he's had. Al was clenching and unclenching his fists, then rubbing his hands. He slowly shifted his eyes to mine. Ignoring Victor, he addressed me. "I did what you wanted. Now where the fuck is the money?" The adrenaline was pumping through him even more than it was me. Any pretense of civility and calm were long gone. Fuck, I envied him. "What are you talking about?" I asked as innocently as I could. I then turned and stared hard at Victor. "You've only done half the job so far." Victor got it first, then Tony, with Al being slow on the uptake. Victor's face blanched white. "Motherfucker," he stammered out, fury raging in his eyes. He started to pull a .38 automatic out of a holster. I don't know who he was planning to shoot, me or Al, but before he had the gun out, Tony tackled him to the floor, and the two of them were thrashing about. Slowly, Al realized the stun I pulled. At first, nothing but anger in his eyes. Then a begrudging admiration, and finally a cold, calculating look as he realized he'd now only have to divide the money two ways. He nodded to me, then joined the fracas. "You double-crossing motherfuckers," Victor kept repeating as he fought over the gun. It started to look like he was getting the upper hand over Tony, but Al changed the equation by kicking Victor hard in the head. From where I was sitting, I couldn't as much see the kick as hear it, as well as the dull oomph that came out of Victor. I heard another thud, then saw Tony crawling up and getting onto Victor's chest. The way his shoulders were tensing, I could guess what was happening. When he was done, Al helped him to his feet. The two of them walked over to me, Tony looking disheveled, his breathing ragged, Al, his eyes nothing but dull black stones. Both of them taken care of, Tony said, his face flushed, his eyes tensed. You're jumping to conclusions there, pal, I said. Victor wasn't part of the deal. It was you and Benny. Tony took a step back, asking, what the fuck you mean me? Exactly what I said, you and Benny. That was a deal Al made with me. He's fucking with you, Al tried to tell him. He reached for him, but Tony jerked his arm away, his eyes bouncing nervously between the two of us. Why the fuck me? He demanded. Because I never liked you, I said, as straight-faced as I could. Why? What have I ever done to you? For Christ's sakes, Tony, get a grip, Al was saying. He's just fucking with you. There was no deal other than Benny. Tony wasn't buying it, especially after Al kept quiet and let him kill Victor. His eyes darted around for the .38 that Victor had dropped on the floor. Joe, why don't you like me? He asked, hurt, half looking at me, half at the gun. I don't know. Something about the way you look. It's hard to pinpoint these things sometimes. You were not part of any deal, Al shouted. He made another reach for Tony, which was the wrong move. Tony dove for the gun. Al, having no choice, followed him. I ended up knocked over on the floor. I couldn't see them during their death struggle, but I could hear them while they grunted and groaned. Where I landed my right hand, the one where Benny had pulled off my fingernails and had damn near torn off my middle finger, was only inches from the switchblade he had dropped. By tensing and relaxing my arm muscles over the last few hours, I'd been able to create an inch of slack in the rope, and was now stretching my fingers, ignoring the pain in them, as I reached for the knife. The tip of my index finger was able to touch it. Working slowly, I inched the knife close enough to where I could grab it. The death struggle was still going on by the time I had the knife in my hand. It was another several minutes before it was over. First one gunshot, then another, the noise only muffled slightly by a human body. My back was turned so I had no idea who had won. I lay there and waited, trying to shield the knife from view. Whichever one it was, he sat on the floor breathing hard. It took several minutes before he got to his feet and walked over to me. I only had one chance and I had to time it right. As my chair was being pulled up, I pushed the knife blade several inches into his leg, trying to sever the posterior tibial artery. From the way the blood gushed out of the wound, I knew I'd connected. I learned hundreds of ways to kill people during my time in Special Forces, and this was as good a way as any. It turns out the person I killed was Al. He took a couple of steps away from me, already woozy, and then sat hard on the floor. It's amazing how fast you can die from having that artery severed. His eyes were already glazing over, and I had to talk quickly so I could explain where the money was. After all, I felt it was only right I kept up my end of the deal. I guess you figured out after I took the money I headed west, but you probably don't know that I stopped off in Vegas along the way. You see, Al, as an adrenaline junkie, I had to stop there. I didn't really give a shit about the money, but taking it the way I did was a bigger rush than you could ever imagine. The problem was, after a rush like that, I needed another fix, and Vegas gave it to me. I put the 800 grand on black, and for those few seconds while the little black ball bounced around the wheel, I had the adrenaline pumping like you wouldn't believe. The ball landed on black, and all I could feel was deflated. I needed another spin of the wheel. I needed to feel that rush again. The casino gave their approval for another bet, so I let 1.6 mil ride on black. This time I lost. If I'd won, I would have kept betting until I lost, because the rush was more important than the money. Anyway, that's where the 800,000 is, left at the Bellagio's casino. The way his head tilted to one side, I knew he was gone. Cutting the artery like I did without medical attention, you only have about 60 seconds, and I think my explanation took a little longer than that. Fuck it, I tried. So there I was, three fingernails pulled off, one finger badly broken, razor wire biting into my ankles, my hands tied to the chair with maybe an inch of leeway in the rope securing my right hand, and holding a knife between my thumb and palm, my fingers too fucked up to hold it any other way. Upstairs lay a dead elderly couple. In the basement with me were the bodies of four violent criminals. If relatives came during the next few days to check up on the couple upstairs, I'd be saved, but would probably be tied to this gang and the armed robberies we'd pulled off, and would be heading to jail for a long time. If no one came, and I couldn't figure out a way to free myself, I'd be dead within a week. Fuck, I'd been in tighter spots. Thinking about my situation got the adrenaline pumping. God, I loved it. The only problem was, when I figured a way out of here, what was I going to do to top this? How was I going to find another adrenaline fix after this one? Eh, a problem for another day.
That was adrenaline, everybody. Thanks to Dave Zeltzerman for sending in that story. He's a Boston man. And that story was originally published in Out of the Gutter, number 3.
In fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.
Here come the drums!
Thank you for listening to The Crime Wave. I'm your host, Seth Harwood. I hope you'll check out the rest of the stories here on Crime Wave and tell your friends about it. It's the CRIMEWAV. Help pass the word, register at our site so that you can participate in the forums and add comments to the episodes. You can email us with questions or comments at info@crimewave.com. Aldo, the mystery dog, and I will get your email and we'll get back to you right quick. You can also call the K7 line, 206-350-4998, to leave comments or feedback. And if you leave a great message, we'll even play it at the end of a show. So drop a line, hop on the website, visit often, spread the word, and thank you for stopping by The Crime Wave.
Here's a song to the star, but the shape of a snake and a smile that went along with that.
Get trusted!
Get trusted!
War they wanted and war they got, but they rooted in the heat where my Uzi got hot when I...
This fall, are you ready for crime? Young Junius, the podcast novel, serialized every week at SethHarwood.com, brings you the story of Junius Pons as a teenager growing up in a Boston that crack cocaine is just starting to take hold of. He's running to escape the consequences of a murder he had to commit and fighting to avenge the death of his brother. But first, he has to find out who did it. So let Seth Harwood, the author of Jack Wakes Up, take you on a trip through crime, action, and violence this fall as he brings Young Junius to SethHarwood.com, your home for serialized crime.
Child said without rhyme, which is why they-